Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly, I could.
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Good evening again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, September 12th, 2012, 8 p.m. on the East Coast. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined, as always, by the legendary Les Thatcher, and joining us at about 8:30 this evening, and we're only going to be going an hour tonight, but joining us at 8:30 this evening from Ring of Honor Wrestling, Brutal Bob Evans, with the announcement that he has been teasing us with and hyping up here for quite some time. He's going to make that announcement on this show at 8:30 p.m. But Les, obviously, how are you doing tonight, sir? And how are you feeling?
I'm tired. But when you get old, you get tired, Mike. No, I'm doing okay. Just finished my packet and everything. I'm catching the bird to Edmonton tomorrow to do 3 days up there with the training camp and head back home on Monday. I'm excited about that.
So you sound jacked up and excited here. So that's one of the reasons we're going a little bit shorter tonight, is so you can get on the road here a little bit earlier and everything. But you know, it's the one big thing in wrestling, period this week that's overshadowed everything else. Obviously, it was the situation on Monday night, the very serious and scary situation that played itself out live on national television, worldwide television, on Monday night. With Jerry the King Lawler, it looks, as we you know, sit here right now, things are looking, you know, pretty good for Jerry, in that he does not lose much oxygen to his brain. When he was unconscious, all his vital signs seem to be good, and even though he's still in a critical stage right now, coming off the major heart attack he suffered, at least he's in very stable condition and lucid and talking and joking now again. But that was terrifying. Unless obviously reactions started to come out with JR and guys like that on Monday night, just completely, you know, did not know what was going on for the longest time, and just had to sit there and look on Twitter and wait for updates from different places. When did you hear about this, or were you watching on Monday night, and just how are things for you, you know, being so close with Lawler and so tied into to that whole region? How were you feeling?
Well, I heard about it when Michael Cole made the first plug. I don't do Twitter or anything like that. And I was jumping back and forth between the Bengals and Ravens and Raw. But, I guess for Jerry's sake, it was a good thing he was there. Had he been in his hotel room, I don't think he'd be with us today. It's just, you know, everybody's talking, should the show have gone on and this and that. I think in terms of killing the commentary and trying to tell any type of story there was a wise, you know, was a good move. I think the wrestling was fine, and I kind of agree with Dave. I think the dialogue at the end was the wrong time and the wrong place to continue, you know, trying to sell something in lieu of the situation. You know, Cole was put in a, you know, that's a tough situation to be in and to know exactly what to do. You know, honestly, my heart goes out to Joe. You know, I've known Jerry since, actually, I mean, we haven't been bosom buddies, but who's doing radio in Memphis when I first wrestled there? And, you know, I've known him off and on and been around him throughout the years. So I just, you know, I hope he comes through this all right. And I also hope that this is a, you know, that cooler heads prevail here and he takes the straps down and leaves them down.
Yeah, that was one. Yeah, I talked to Lawler before, and he works. If you just don't realize how much Jerry Lawler is actually out there doing shows and doing these indie shows. I mean, nobody would have even known in the one of Aruba, you know, except for the people that were in Aruba, if this hadn't have happened. And in the way I heard Dave say it, it's like, you know, it does make you stop and think for a second that if it had not happened there, even though it was such a, you know, it was just such a terrible thing on live TV. But, it, you know, in a way, if it hadn't happened there, that was the best place it could have happened. If there could be such a thing to say, it was the best place it could have happened. And it made me kind of think to, I know this has been an issue in Delaware, unless you know DJ Hyde quite well and CZW. And there were issues with things in Pennsylvania, I believe Delaware, that they were doing as far as having, you must have, if you're going to have 50 people there, you must have an ambulance and you must have EMTs. And I know a lot of people on the indie wrestling scene, and deservedly so because they cannot afford a lot of this stuff, they were upset with it. But this, you know, kind of gave me pause for a second and go, you know what, just because of things like this, I, you know, anytime you get a gathering of people, I'm really happy that there was, you know, that there's so many EMTs, and it's something that everybody should kind of stop and think about too on these shows. Yes, it doesn't happen often, but it has happened in the past, and this was just another reminder of it too. These men are doing, you know, strenuous, men and women doing incredibly strenuous activities, and, you know, guys that go out in the indie scene who, you know, may not be in the best of shape. I mean, you know, Lawler was always a fast food eater. He never damaged himself with drugs or alcohol or anything like that. Loved Coca-Cola. You know, he talks about a lot of that stuff in his book too, but, you know, a lot of other guys don't take care of themselves anywhere near that level, and they go out there and they work indie shows and things like that. Hopefully for those people, it kind of gives a pause to just remember to have ample, you know, routes to hospitals and have EMTs and things like that, because, again, this could happen at any time. It's just one of those things. And I know you were in, left being a Cincinnati guy, if I'm not mistaken, it was the umpire that had passed away. Mark Schott was still alive.
Right.
You know, and it's just, this stuff happens. It's just, you know, when it happens, obviously on a wrestling level, you know, it stands out, you know, a whole lot more. But have you, obviously there's been cases in the past, Iron Mike DiBiase being one. Obviously for listeners of this website, or, you know, listeners of this show and this website, obviously Ray Gunkel is a name that always comes up, but in your career and in your history, had this happened close to you at any time with something like this happen, or even just a situation of a stroke or a seizure that may not have been serious, but happened in the locker room?
A dear friend of mine died in the ring in Charlotte in 72, Luther Lindsay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we were very, very close. And actually, that night, I had finished my match and was headed back to the dressing room, and he was on his way out to the ring for his match. And we slapped hands and kibitzed, you know, just in passing one another. And I was, you know, and whatever amount of time later, I was I'd just come out of the shower and was drying off. And an usher stuck his head in the door and said, "Something's happened to Luther. He's unconscious." And at that point, I just pulled my slacks on. I threw a pair of flip-flops and threw a towel around my neck. And Johnny Weaver and Abe Jacobs, who were both Abe, like myself, was very close to Luther, went to the ring. Now, of course, there was no doctor, and they called the ambulance. And they were able – actually, what had happened, as we found out later, his heart had exploded. He had had walking pneumonia and had time off and basically had just come back too quickly, and the walls of the heart were weak. And he dove on Bobby Paul with like a, what you might call a big splash or something. And died right there. He won the match. And, of course, Paul's waiting for Looper to get up, and Luther didn't. And Bobby had to crawl, you know, push him away and crawl out from under him. And then they realized something was wrong. He was unconscious. And anyway, in some manner, they got the heart to pump a little bit while we were out there. And they put him on a stretcher and took him to the hospital. We went back in the locker room, and Johnny and Abe had yet to wrestle. And I told John Ringley, who was part of the Crockett office at the time, I said, I'll get dressed, pack Luther's stuff, and go to the hospital. And because Luther stayed at my apartment in Charlotte a couple times, he had a farm just north of Greensboro. So anyway, I'll never forget when I was starting to put his stuff in his bag and get ready to go. Ringley came through the door, and just a look on his face told me what I didn't want to hear. And he said, "You don't have to be in a hurry." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, Luther's gone." So, you know, we'd lost him. And I was one of the pallbearers at the funeral. And I was telling Mike Johnson today, I said, you know, that was 12 years into my career. And up to that point, I don't know that I had ever considered the fact that, you know, you could die in there. I mean, you know, it just had never, you know, I'm sure it crossed my mind, but, you know, there was never a focus on it. I never really registered, and it was driven home like it was that night. And, you know, it gave me cause to pause and think about it a little bit. I honestly don't think it changed, or at least not consciously changed the way I worked or anything. But, you know, you just realize that it could happen.
Now, when it comes to Lawler in the whole situation there, now obviously you kept touring, you know, you kept going, even though that obviously you had a chance to go to the funeral and to do that sort of stuff. It's not like Crockett Promotions closed up shop. They kept going, believe it or not. And I know, I mean, Owen was one thing, and it's, again, you're looking back in hindsight on something that was just so, you just would never have believed it. So I'm not saying give him a complete free pass. Everybody give him kind of a pass. That was just a bizarre situation. I think there were a lot of people who tried to ring up the argument, well, should the show have been stopped? I got to be honest. I think that they did the absolute best thing that they possibly could. The only thing I didn't like, and it's not even to say I didn't like it, but unless Michael Cole, who has served in Iraq and has been in, you know, you forget about this with Michael Cole, the character, but Michael Cole, the actual, you know, news reporter, you know, has been well seasoned. The only thing that threw me off a little bit there was if he was obviously very shaken up and upset for obvious reasons. I almost, unless it was his choice to stay, I wish they would have gotten a Scott Stanford or a Josh Matthews or somebody else out there so he did not have to stay out there. But I think for the rest of it, and again, outside of the promo, because I had expected them to wrap up and be done at 11 o'clock. And that the Punk Cena Hart thing was, I thought, great. But it was very, again, it was very eerie after all of this stuff. And granted, you know, in the breaks before that, Michael Cole had become a little bit more relaxed. But he was still, you know, it was still an incredibly scary situation. It's not like he left you with much comfort in those updates, although you felt a little bit better about Lawler's condition. But
I think the shtick at the end gave you cause to question whether it actually was real or not. You know, I can't tell you over the last couple of days, just at the gym or a couple of friends that I've run into that are not necessarily wrestling fans that had picked up on this on CNN or wherever. I know it's been out in the major news media. And the first thing out of their mouth was that real or was that part of the show?
Wow.
And, of course, they don't surf the websites like you and I do. They're not that, you know, interested or immersed in it. So they didn't know, you know, and they – well – you know, when you realize, you know, when you go back and realize we blew Vince up, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how you can't question people ask that. You know, you can't look at them as they are.
The major media picked up on the story that Vince McMahon had actually sold WWE to Donald Trump or whatever that situation. That was a legitimately, and it actually dropped the stock price. So you're exactly right.
Yeah, so you know, and the sad thing is, Mike, I think where we need to blur the lines, we don't. I'm going to say this about Monday night before the incident with Jerry. I sat here and wondered why I was watching a bad Ed Sullivan variety show. Because, I mean, when I say that, that's I know if people say, well, you know, that's what they want. I've said, yes, I know that's what they want. But I think Monday night was it was worse. When I say worse, you know, I'm sure somebody was entertained by it. But, I mean, recaps from Friday night, recaps from last Monday, the whole, anger management thing, the whole Vicky and, AJ and the stupid thing with Sheamus and the lawyers and that crap. I mean, it's just like, why? You know, why? Honestly, why am I wasting my time with this?
No, I'm sure you're not the only one who was thinking that. I mean, it's way too long. And it's filled with it. And this was not a shocking thing. The fact that never ending Sheamus Otunga piece that went on forever, and the very drawn out stuff between Kane and Bryan, including a video package to top off all the other nonsense that they were doing there. This show is too long, and it's filled with nothing. And when it is filled with something, it seems to be aimed mostly at kids who would not be even up watching this stuff, or at least should not be. So it's painful. It's almost painful, and unfortunately, the stuff at the end, which again, as you said, was misplaced because of what had happened, which was very good, and their back and forth was, I thought, great, and one of the best promos of the year going back and forth, but. It's no one's going to remember. I guess people will remember it because they'll be able to play the video packages over and over again. But with that said, I mean, it's just with the whole rest of the show, that one good thing does not, a good 3-hour show make.
Yeah, you got 3 hours and you do 5 minutes or 10 minutes of something decent within that 3 hours. Doesn't it get lost? I mean, or the value of it or the how good it was becomes diminished because of all the other nonsense.
And as that is going on, the Ravens come out kicking ass against Cincinnati. And, this football, yet they're tied in together. Let me tell you something. When the boom was happening in the 90s, they pulled more people were wondering whether Monday Night Football should be eliminated. That's how much damage WCW and WWF were doing with the eyeballs that were going to be on football. They come out, put on a show, and this is when you have two games on Monday night, and that was a good reminder too of, but for both TNA and WWE, if you don't pick it up, you're going to lose more and more eyeballs to football on Monday and Thursday night, and it's people will continue to not care. But I know we're
pushed up. The only reason I stopped channel surfing was when it got to be 34-13, I thought, I've seen enough of this. I mean, I'm a Redskins fan, brother, and I'm floating on air the way RG3 stepped up and what they the Redskins pounded the Saints on Sunday. But, I mean, still, the Bengals are my home team, and I mean, after a 23-year drought, I'd love to see them do well. And I thought after last year's performance, well, maybe they will. But, like I say, at 34-13, I said, okay, that's enough. I mean, I'm not no reason to channel surf now and make myself feel any worse than I do already. But you're right. I mean, if there's good football, this sophomoric nonsense will get lost in the shuffle. I mean, and why should? I mean, there's the truth of it is, Mike, a 12-13-year-old boy, if he's going to stay up, that would probably much prefer to watch a good football game than anger management or, and the whole Lipschitz lawyer thing. It's like, my God, the minute that comes out of your mouth, then, you might as well hold up a sign and say, we're doing shtick.
That joke was old in the 50s.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that to death, right? I mean, Jesus. But we have these intelligent writers who wrote for network television. And, of course, they're not writing for it now. But, I mean, they are, but not on anything worth it. You know, it's just, you know, and I hate beating a dead horse, but it is. It's become, and, you know, and somebody like Daniel Bryan, who is a very talented young man, who spends the whole time screaming no, 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 so that the fans will scream yes, yes, yes. Do I care?
You know, I know. Well, Rich is actually screaming, no, 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 you got to go to break. So we should do that here, since we're only going an hour. And remember, everyone, Bob Evans coming up here in about 10 minutes. We're going to throw it to a little break now and be back right after this.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap, the legendary Les Thacker, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and got about 10 minutes or so before Brutal Bob jumps on the line with us and tells us about the secret that he's going to reveal and has been hyping up here for a while. But, Les, let me actually tie in a little bit of old school here, since we're only going an hour tonight, but a little bit of old school, a little bit of Jerry Lawler, and a little bit of politics. And you may not know this or not, but I just wanted to kind of throw it out there. You know, the legend of Jerry Lawler, and his fight to try to get a world championship, which ultimately ended with defeating Kurt Hennig in 1988 at the Mid-South Coliseum, and the short run he had as AWA champion. But he had, you know, many builds to Nick Bockwinkel and Jack Briscoe and Harley Race over the years in Memphis. Obviously, there was the one big one. I think it was against Jack Briscoe, where he had the 10-match series, and it looked like he was going to get the belt, and it never ended up happening. I guess there was a talk of him and Flair, too, right around the time that the Meadowlands shows were happening and all the times were happening in the early 80s, around 1984. But to your knowledge, was Lawler ever close as far as realistically the other members of the NWA, many of whom look down on, you know, quote-unquote Memphis wrestling and Tennessee wrestling and things like that? And obviously, Gary Hart, we've talked about his book and the bias there and some bias from other people for that region. What was it with Lawler? Because obviously, he could draw on the national stage. And no, he was not the greatest wrestler in the world, but he did have a little bit of amateur background in high school and everything.
was he truly ever really close? And if given the ball, do you think he would have been able to run with it as good as the Flair and Terry Funk and Dusty Rhodes in that little time frame?
No. I mean, simply in one word, no. When I say this, I like Jerry. I admire and respect everything he's done in the business, everything he did in Memphis or any place else for that matter. But he and when you if you ask me to break this down, Mike, I couldn't do that. But in no way, shape, or form would I even consider him as an NWA world champion in the 60s or the 70s. No.
A better big fish in a small pond, which I want to say small pond, you know, but...
It wasn't that either. You know, I mean, Amarillo was a small town, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't metropolitan downtown New York City by any stretch of the imagination, but, I mean, it was just a type. You know, I guess you'd, if you were doing movies or TV series, you'd call it stereotype. Dusty, honestly, wouldn't have been my call. You know, that was, I think, more a political move. But Flair probably was other than Buddy Rogers, was the only, I guess what you might call a flamboyant personality. But that, and when I say that, we're not, you know, if some young person listening say, well, you know, look at Kobe, you know, we're talking about the 60s and 70s now. We're not talking about 2000. We're not talking about the last 20 years. Talking about the 60s and the 70s, and he just wasn't, you know, I don't believe you could take him that seriously. He wasn't. Jerry was a talented performer, very much so, and a hell of an interview. But he just, I don't know how to say it other than he didn't look the part, you know.
Yeah,
and I don't disagree that the name probably came up, but I would be hard-pressed to believe that it was ever a serious consideration. You know, I mean, I can't imagine it was down to either he or Ric Flair or he or Jack Briscoe in any way, shape. Of course, you realize that's the other thing, too, back then. We, especially with your world champion, were trying for credibility. And that champion, when they came into your city, you tried to get them on an actual news program for a short interview. You know, you tried to establish them in mainstream media, not just on your wrestling show, and because it was an event, because they weren't there all the time. And it's not that Jerry wasn't, you know, couldn't have been a politician and schmooze the anchor people and that sort of thing. It's just he just didn't come across as, you know, that particular type of athlete. And as crazy as anybody that's, you know, again, if the people listening to us have only seen the Terry Funk of the last 20 years, well, that's not the Terry Funk that was world champion either, because when Terry Funk, did mainstream media, like, example, Channel 10 in Knoxville before a title match, there wasn't a clown in the place. I mean, he was very serious very respectful of the business. And not that Jerry couldn't have tried to have been that, but, you know, here again, like I say, if we were talking about making movies, it's more like he wasn't – that you couldn't cast him in that part, I guess is the best way to say it. Not because he couldn't work or not because he couldn't talk. It's just that wasn't the guy.
Yeah, you
Does
know,
that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. And you look at the other guys who, let's just say around that time, who would be – up for debate and up for a chance of getting them to it, who hadn't over the, say, Wahoo McDaniel or Dick Murdoch or somebody like that. For me, it would have been, you know, of people in that time, still it would have been like a Ted DiBiase over a Jerry Lawler. And again, no insult to Jerry Lawler, but if Jerry Lawler had his role and he was great in his role and he did a great job self-marketing, and obviously everyone knows the deal with Andy Kaufman and how he was able to, you know, move himself into different positions and do a remarkable job and be a massive territorial superstar. But and Rich would have to jump on to tell me this or not, but if I recall correctly, it's not like Lawler was a massive draw in Atlanta or anything like this. When we talk about, especially in Hall of Fame season, where, you know, guys went to touring and were not as big of a guy in their own town. And Lawler was a perfect example of that, although, with that said, not many other people were drawing, you know, 80% of all the TV eyeballs in their city like he was, too. But obviously he wasn't the only one to give credit for all that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're talking about the Hall of Fame thing. Dick and I covered that on Saturday, and I don't do the board, because if I did, I'd probably go off on somebody and get it taken off.
It's a horrible place.
You know, but I set off a firestorm of people who just think I'm arrogant and he's not following. You know, and we're not doing a show this week because I'm out of this country, but next week, and I'm going to say this then too. This crap of, well, I guess Les said that you can't understand the business if you aren't in it. Yes, I did. And yes, I say it now. And by God, Chris Jericho just a few weeks ago said there are people making a living in our friggin' business that don't understand it. But
yeah,
the local insurance adjuster knows more about my business than I do.
Well, it's always kind of funny when, you know, you or Linda jump on you, and now they jump on Lance a little bit more. It's funny. I've heard that same thing about you don't understand it, and talking about all the other guys like Dick Murdoch and stuff like, where just, no, you don't understand. You were working with them. You don't get it.
I think I know what I am getting now. Just cut us off, Rich. Go ahead, by God. We don't care.
Well, I think that may be a sign, because that would be that music to ask us, what about Bob?
I'll be God. I am God. I have the switches, right?
Brutal Bob Evans?
Hello, guys. How are you?
How are you, sir?
I'm good. Just
Well, that's just your opinion. Oh, man,
well,
happy birthday.
True. That's always up for debate, right?
Yeah, happy birthday, Bobby.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Yeah, 40 came and went, and I feel better than I ever have, so I wish I could complain about it. Plus, they say life begins at 40, so I guess I'm just been born. So
Kevin Kelly said that was your 61st birthday. He lied to me.
Well, you know, somewhere between 40 and 61. Hey, guys, I just jumped in on the end, but obviously, you know, making the best of a rough situation here. I was very happy to hear the news that Jerry Lawler doesn't seem to have suffered any issues, you know, with his brain and such. And I just want to send my best along to his family. And obviously, Les, I heard you at the tail end telling a couple of stories about Jerry. And like I said, Jerry worked for me a couple of times in 2008, I believe it was, and was nothing but a professional and tried to help the young guys and put out every single night. So, you know, I've never seen Jerry Lawler take a night off at an independent show. So, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why I put strain on MSR, because the guy always busted his hump. So, best wishes to him. So, guys, if you want me to just get right into it, is that okay? Or,
well, yeah, you've been leading us on.
Do you want a drum? Do you want a drum roll?
I don't need a drum roll. I don't need a jelly roll. I don't need any of that stuff. So,
you know what? Before you get into it, I've got to throw a little sarcasm out here. You know me. I was
Go
so afraid you were going to come on and say you were pregnant and I was the father. That was what bothered me.
Well, I heard I was listening last week and I heard your dreaded fear that it would be an exciting TNA Dixie moment where I talked about one of the cast members of the Jersey Shore that nobody's ever heard of, or somebody from the real world from 1998 that, you know, has long left us. But no, it's something a little more personal, something a little more. I sent you guys an advanced copy. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it. I know Les stuck in a note. So I'm basically just going to swing through my open letter. This is going to be released to everybody, but you guys have been the best to me, and you guys get it first. So without further ado, an open letter from Brutal Bob Evans to the wrestling world. Over the past 4 years, I've gone through a career resurgence that has been nothing but a blessing to me. I've overcome obstacles, challenges, and people to be able to show my craft on a national stage in a limited capacity. That's the word that eats at me, is limited. It's my fault, no one else's. For 2 years, I've been told by many that my best use was as a manager, quote-unquote, or quote-unquote, a trainer, and I couldn't be utilized in a wrestling ring. I didn't want to hear that, so I trained my ass off. When I bucked the odds and appeared for the first time on national TV in June of this year, after 7,397 days of not appearing on national TV, I was told it was going to be in a limited capacity. Then I did better than expected. I was put on a pay-per-view event last month in my own hometown, and it was predicted I would fall flat on my face, with the entire wrestling world laughing at me. I did better than expected. I almost defeated Adam Cole on several occasions 3 weeks before my 40th birthday. Now, as I pass my birthday, I realize that I don't have all the time in the world, and progress has been slower than I expected. I do want to wrestle on a national stage regularly. If I wait for management to act with all their other outside distractions, I may lose my chance at a great ending to a solid but an unspectacular run. The time is now for me to seize the opportunity. Therefore, guys, I am hereby announcing that I will be competing in Iron Week this November. Iron Week will consist of 7 60-minute matches taking place over 7 consecutive days. I did this once before in 2009 for 6 days, and this year I'd like to beat my own record. It's a week-long 8-man tournament, but it's one man taking on the other 7. In 2009, we had a week-long event in Moosup, Connecticut. This week, I'll be traveling to different wrestling rings around the country. Since I'm operating on a limited budget and I cannot run 7 consecutive wrestling events, I will be wrestling most of my opponents in closed rings at wrestling schools. The event will be timed, witnessed by several, and available online and possibly on DVD. We're hoping to create a reality show-type situation around this event. My goal is to have the final and record-breaking event in my hometown in front of a live crowd. I'll be accepting donations to help offset my expenses, gas, minimal production, motel, and paying my opponents at slamtech2000@yahoo.com. The last event in my hometown will act as a fundraiser for Autism Speaks. For anyone that knows me, this condition is something that is close to my heart and my family, and I'm hoping to raise awareness of this cause. Several wrestlers have been contacted, and the first competitor will be released next Tuesday, September 19th. I am taking serious submissions as one or two positions are still in question. The rules will be similar to 2009. Very little locker room interaction between opponents. Les, I'm sure you're happy about that. There will be a 30-second rest period between falls, and the last 10 minutes of every match will be a sprint with no rest periods. I'm a lucky man. I get to work for a large national company. I have a wonderful wife and 2 adorable children. I have a great group of friends, family, and fans that wish the best for me. But I still haven't silenced all the critics, and I still haven't silenced the own critic inside my heart. I'm 40 years old, and I want to make history. And why not me? Why not Bob? Sincerely, Robert Paul Evans, Jr., a.k.a. Brutal Bob Evans. That's the statement.
I applaud you, my friend. I applaud you. Here's my, part of my question. My first question would be, can you find 7 guys that can go 60 minutes?
Actually, Les, I was real proud of the fact that we took six of the guys, and most of them in 2009 were young guys. And my whole thing was a reaction to Dave Meltzer quoting the WWE back then, that saying there's no talent on the independents, and I went out to prove him wrong, and I did. Actually, 2 out of the 6 guys I'd never wrestled before in my entire life, and we went an hour and managed to hold at least our own interest, if not the people's, and we managed to get through it. And the guys were, I really feel like the guys, especially the younger guys, came through it and had a feeling of accomplishment. I really think one of those guys was young Mike Bennett. Another guy was a young Matt Taven. There were several guys that actually helped. I don't know if that was the only springboard, but that, I think that really helped boost their confidence. You can go an hour with people that you've never really wrestled before. I think that's pretty impressive. Now, most of the guys that I've talked to, fellas, I have wrestled, but I've only wrestled one time. But I'm hoping to, sorry, I got messages coming in left and right, guys. Sorry. I'm hoping to really do most of the guys that I'm wrestling only wrestle once or twice in my career. And I've never wrestled any of those guys for an hour, I can tell you that much. There will be no repeats from 2009, too, because I know that was Sam's question was, are you going to be wrestling Taven? And I said no, because I wrestled Taven in 2009. That's the only reason. I would, but I'm trying to keep it. I want to make it all different people. So, and it, actually, with my background, it's going to be a couple of more higher-level people as well. So,
well, Bob, I think. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Honestly, just because I know you, you know, you as much as you're doing this for yourself, and you make it sound like you're doing it for yourself, there's always that teacher inside you and that nurturer inside you where, you know, you talk about 2 of the 6, Mike Bennett and Matt Taven. Things seem to be working out pretty good for those guys. I mean, you can go 60 minutes with a guy that you've never talked to because you've been doing this for so long. But for the guys, and obviously it's going to be a little bit of a step up this time around with some of the guys that you have, but, you know, when you talk about, you know, there's no talent in the indie scene, you're still trying to prove yourself, but you still have guys under your wing that you work with and that you, you know, deal with on a daily basis and go out there and wrestle with constantly. This is, can be as much for them as it is for you, too, just because, again, the talent pool is so thin out there, and guys don't know how to do it right. I mean, this is kind of for everybody involved, even as much as you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, like I said, Mike, I get and I understand Les's criticisms, and believe me, I have plenty of my own. But it really it bums me out when I see guys that have a lot of potential and then don't get a chance to use it because they have 3-minute matches. And granted, we all can't wrestle for an hour, but I think it's something, and I know Les has probably done some hour broadways or come close to it. There's a certain level of accomplishment that you have just by making it. And obviously, since I don't want to expose the business, I don't want to be like, hey, come see me wrestle 7 60-minute Broadways in a row. We had to structure it in a way where we could make it work and under the kayfabe situation too, so let's do Ironman matches, you know? And I think that there's plenty of talent out there. Is it developed? Is it perfected? No. But I think with anything I can do to help get these guys rolling, get these guys going, and obviously, yeah, I'm pushing, man, and you know how hard I push, and Les, you know how hard I try to help the, I mean, I try to do as much as I can, you know, and it's a situation, guys, where you just, you know, you're being left on the bench, and you feel like you can come in and hit a double in the gap and drive in a couple of runs, and not everybody sees that, and no, I'm not talking about the management of Ring of Honor, because they see my talent. They just haven't found a spot for me yet. So they've opened the door for me, but I'm trying to kick it in. Of course I am. And I'm trying to kick it in for a few of the guys. And I want these guys to prove themselves. And I think they will. In fact, I know they will, because a few of the guys are well-known people that have already.
I think it's a test. It's a test for whoever these 7 guys are. We can sit here and talk negative or positive about the indies, but for the most part, as you know Bob as well as I do, most of these guys choreograph everything but going to the bathroom.
Absolutely.
And, so to drag somebody out there and make them follow what you're calling in the ring for 60 minutes, it's going to school for them. And that's, Kenny Wayne, who was one of the nightmares with Danny Davis.
Yes.
Kenny runs a school over, just below,
right across,
just into Mississippi, below Memphis.
Yeah, I was going to say, right across the water, right?
yeah. And his graduation is a 60-minute match.
Yeah, and I know Dr. Tom Pritchard was talking about that the same way, that if there's a guy, when he was working for FCW, that was one of the things that he liked to do, just to... And that it wasn't something that actually sparked me, because I had done it a few years ago, but it was good to hear that these guys were doing it, because I've heard the same thing about Kenny Wayne too, and that was one of the things that was exciting to me, that these guys kind of felt the same way, just to be like, yeah, I can, you know, you guys think you have it all figured out, and here we go, let's go an hour, you know, can you go an hour right now? Can you go an hour on the spot?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like it was done all the, you know, every week or every night.
Sure.
40 years ago, but I remember up in Dayton, Punk and Joe, and we were standing out in the parking lot talking, but, you know, they were on the main event that night, and, you know, they said, what do you, you know, anyway, part of the, my what I interjected in the conversation, I said, guys, you just look at it this way. You got 57 minutes to build to your finish.
There you go.
You know, I mean, Mike's laughing, but Bob, is that right? I mean, if you know what you're, I mean, well, you're going to do 3 falls, but I mean, these guys are going 1.
Right.
And I said, so whatever your finish is, you know, you've got a 57 minute build.
Right.
And that's the way you got to look at it.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's actually, we did quite a few falls in the matches. They turned out almost less like some of the old Terry Funk Texas Death matches with, you know, 8 falls to 7 and all this, because that it's kind of an interesting thing, that twist I put on it at the end, that sprint round, because what happens is if you snap a submission on somebody in the last 10 minutes and they ring the bell and you get a fall, all you have to do is release that hold for half a second and you can snap it right back on again. There's no 30-second rest fall in the last rest period in the last 10 minutes. So that means you can actually come back from, if you're down 3 falls to nothing, you can actually come back and really rally back and get a lot of falls that way. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. I know the people liked it and the guys liked it that were in there with me. It really adds a whole dynamic to it. You know, can I, and I love the Iron Man concept anyway, the most falls in 60 minutes, because if somebody puts a hold on you early, do you tap out just so you don't hurt yourself and so you can keep going, or do you try to resist it and fight out of the hold? You know, it's a cool dynamic. I've always been fascinated by that ever since I was just a fan, that concept. So I've managed to put myself into my own self-torture, but it's something I'm real thrilled about doing. We're going to tie it in with some charitable organizations and really, you know, make it something big, and hopefully get some national publicity out of it. You know, I just sent something over to Dave and Brian. Hopefully they'll put something up, send something over to a couple of the guys at the Torch, and hopefully we can get some publicity out on this and really help build up these guys and show them that we can still do this, you know, because I think one of the biggest compliments I've been paid is the one you paid me last month, when a lot of people were critical of me going in with Adam Cole, and you said Adam Cole probably learned more with Bob in 15 minutes than he would learn with most of the guys on that roster. And that was something that, you know, I know you meant it, and I sent you a note about it, but it was something I really appreciated, and it was something that I'm glad somebody sees that I have a value, you know, and that's what I think my value is. Let's go, kid, you know, let's go, let's get in the ring, let's do it.
What I'd be interested in, I'm going to butt in here, both of you guys. Shut up a bit. What I'm interested in hearing is how you are training for this.
Well, as you know, or as you may or may not know, I've been doing a ton of functional training. I do most of my weightlifting and heavy, you know, resistance work in 60-minute bursts. Anyway, I do a lot of group classes with. A lot of rounds, a lot of functional training, a ton of compound exercises, a ton of kettlebell work, heavy kettlebell work, and I also work with three different strength and conditioning coaches. I work with one that's a general fitness. I work with one that's strength and conditioning with football, and then I work with another guy who does conditioning for track and field. So I have kind of it's a full spectrum, you know.
Cool.
And then, obviously, I do my cardio on the side, too. My feet are shot, so I can't run. So I do as much as I can on the stair climber and the elliptical and things like that. But mostly, it's a lot of 4 or 5 days a week of very functional training that's very good for wrestling. It started a couple years ago, and it saved my career. So, you know, so that's why I've really and that's another thing too. A lot of people in my gym do a lot of these tough mutter and a lot of these real crazy foot races where you're, you know, jumping in mud and jumping into ice and doing all these crazy things. And that was another thing that kind of sparked me. I said I'd like to do something a little more, you know, conditional to wrestling, something a little more that I could do. So, and I actually just got one of my trainers just emailed me and said, "Let's go, let's get it going, let's work a program out." So he's already excited about it. So,
hey Bob, we actually got a phone call. Actually, came in on the line here. That's the area code is Long Island. And caller, are you there?
Yes, I am here. How you doing?
I think I know that voice.
Yes, sir. I talked earlier with you, and I promise, you know, I know this is your time, but I couldn't help but just call, and I don't want to take much of it, so I'll try to get just straight to the point.
Are you gonna introduce yourself, or are you just gonna talk one-on-one?
By the way, this is No Fear Mike Mondo from Ring of Honor, actually. And
that big mouth guy from New York. I know who you are.
That's me.
A big mouth
that's
guy
me.
From Boston and a big guy mouth from big
yeah.
mouth guy from New York. Should be great.
Yeah. I just want to get to the point. Like I said, I don't want to take the time, Bob. This is your time. But I just want to say, even though putting our differences aside on television, I've known you for had the pleasure of knowing you for the past, year or two now. And let me tell you, man, you have something special inside you. You have just your passion. Whenever I was down and I needed someone to go to, you were my guy, and you got me past that block mentally where I needed to get to get to where I need to be. And, you know, if I had a question or somebody, you know, to ask, you know, I went to you, and, you know, I'm behind you 100% with this. I want you to do this. I want you to excel at this. And it would be an honor and a privilege. I've done about 14, maybe 15-hour Broadways in my career. And I would love nothing more. And I know you're not mentioning any names, but I'm just throwing my name in the hat to step in the ring, whether it's an empty arena, sold out arena, you know, in a wrestling school warehouse. But anytime I can go 60 minutes with Brutal Bob Evans, it would be not only an honor, but a privilege of mine. And I just want to say, you know, good luck. And believe me, I know in my heart that you can do this and you will do this because you've got what it takes. You get it. You just get it. You know what I mean? And that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Mike. Like I said, we've had a lot of differences in Ring of Honor, and you've been torturing myself and the Prodigy, but maybe that's somehow maybe that's a way I can get back at you. But definitely I respect you as an athlete. I respect you as a wrestling machine, and you have definitely been given serious consideration. So I wouldn't be surprised if you can expect a phone call from one of my people in the next week or so.
Dr. Tom always said it best. There's those that say they will, there's those that say they do, and there's those that will do whatever it takes. I know which guy you are because I'm the same one as well.
All right, man. I respect the hell out of you. You have a good night.
Take care.
All right.
Hey, thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
That's, you know, Mike Mondo is a well-conditioned man.
I think he just wants you to get him next to Maria. I think that's the whole job.
Well, he's doing a good enough job by himself. You know, I go out there and I make my commentating debut. I'm stealing the show. They almost get rid of. They almost hand Nigel McGuinness the pink slip as I'm sitting there, and then all of a sudden here comes Mike Mondo to ruin my. I got my day off. I was wearing my day off hat and everything, and then here comes Mike Mondo to torture me some more. So I think if the Prodigy doesn't get a hold of him, I think that's probably something I should get a hold of him too and teach him a wrestling lesson, Les. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you can do it, Bob. So do you have? I mean, do you have a schedule as of yet? Like where you're going to start the first match or the first two or three?
Well, I can't divulge that right now, and I'm not trying to be cute. I'm just there were a couple last minute. I was hoping to actually release the full schedule in the next couple of weeks. There were a couple of red flags that came up where somebody that I was strongly I really wanted to do it may not be able to do it now in the given schedule that I had. I'm looking at the first week in November. I may have to push it up a week or back a week. But if I do, it won't be because I'm poorly scheduled here. It's just when you're dealing with a week's worth of people, you have to find people that are free on the weekends. Like I said, I'm going to be driving to people to do this stuff in the middle of the week too, which I'm happy to do. We did it in Connecticut a week's worth of shows, but the problem was we weren't really drawing any people in the middle of the week. We drew pretty well at the end of the week because people wanted to see the conclusion of this, but. So this way we're going to do it, make it a little more economical, and like I said, I'm hiring a couple of camera guys to follow me around, make a little reality show out of it. You know, I want to record this. I want to see where we can go with it. I think it's going to be something exciting, something dynamic, and the schedule will be basically I'm probably going to start around my hometown and then move outward and then come back to my hometown. That's what I'm hoping to do. So that's the idea, and everything is pretty much located, I think, in the Northeast. Although, like I said, there are a couple of people that, you know, Mondo's in Louisville, so I don't know if that's going to work. But we'll figure out a way. There were rumors that he might move back to Long Island, which means now he's going to torture me from 200 miles away instead of 900. So, but that's always a possibility to go further out. So, but whatever we're going to do it by car anyway. So, but like I said, I have a pretty good list of five or six guys that I definitely want to use and have actually sent some feelers out, a lot of feelers out to people, and most people have come back pretty positive. And then, like I said, I do have probably a good list of four or five alternates too that could fit in and make that work too. So,
It's a shame that you mentioned Mondo, but it's a shame you couldn't do that Wednesday night at OVW.
I know, that'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things on my bucket list. I did get a chance to work for Les Thatcher's HWA one time with a young man whose name I forget, but that was Les. I think Les was surprised that I was halfway decent, so I think I took him back there. So, well, that was a long time ago. But then, but I never did. I've been to OVW. I've managed. You know, I've brought Bennett to the ring, but I've never actually had an actual match in the OVW arena, in the Davis arena. So, and I have very, you know, warm and strong feelings for Danny Davis and Rip Rogers and Nick Dinsmore and the whole training staff there. So I would love to do that. It'd be an honor just to wrestle in front of those guys. So and the fans, you know, I love the OVW fans too. So and actually, since Taylor's been down there and we've gone down there a couple times for Ring of Honor to do TV tapings, I've gotten to know quite a few of the the wrestlers and referees, and they're all I consider them kind of OVW cousins. You know, that they're real good people down there, and it's a good crew, and you know, I'd love to be a part of that. So we shall see.
I thank you so much for doing it on this show here. We're wrapping up here towards the end of the night here, and you know, you and Sarah Del Rey wouldn't hurt my feelings either, although that just really probably stems from me wanting to go 60 minutes with Maria, but if I said that, it would take Mike Bennett less than 60 seconds to kill me, so I won't. SlamTech 2000 at Yahoo.com.
Yeah, we're going to put up sorry, Mike. We're going to put up a PayPal link. Like I said, this isn't for me to make $42 million and put it in my pocket. Everything will be... you know, I can provide strict accounting if I have to. I'm not very good at it, but my wife is. But basically it's just going to be, you know, put some gas in the tank, and with gas flying up, it's going to make things a little more interesting. And you know, it'll probably just, if we could get a grand or two in the bucket, I'll just throw the rest at Autism Speaks. Cause like I said, there's, you know, people near and dear to me that are affected by on the autism spectrum. And I want to, I want to do what I can to help. And, never been much of a charity minded guy. If somebody just asked me to take money out, if I have it, I'll give it to them. But I'm just not that kind of a guy. But if I can tie it in with wrestling, I can get it'll be a nice byproduct, and we'll, raise some money for some quality people that are trying to end this dreaded condition. So
I want to let you know that if I can help you in some way, I'd be more than happy. Now, I won't go 60 minutes with you.
Yeah, you already turned down. Les was my first, like, solid no.
Mike, I told him I'd do 60 minutes if we could do 5 minutes at a time.
Well, this is the thing. Les would be so good, and Les and I would be so good in the ring that all the young guys would quit because they wouldn't even understand what we were doing. It would look like, you know, we were speaking French and they were speaking English or something. They wouldn't understand what they were seeing. So
mentally I can do it. Physically my body can't keep up with my mind anymore.
Well, maybe we can have, like, put a headset on one of the young guys, and it'd be like a quarterback coach. You can just call the plays as they go in.
There you go.
Well, I tell you what. Our guest next week would love to see him do it with you, because Dr. Tom Pritchard is actually going to be on with us next week.
Love Dr. Tom. Please send him my best.
Absolutely. And by the way, everybody, too, for Peach State Pandemonium tomorrow night with the guys is an open forum, old school discussion. So Jerry Oates and Mike Norris and Bobby Simmons get a chance to talk to them about some stuff, too. And, you know, Bob and Les, obviously, you know, as far as, you know, what you guys have going on, Bob, you certainly said it, but how can people get up with you on your Twitter and Facebook and everything? And Les, you know, obviously you talked about it a little bit before, but let everybody know what you got going on, too.
Well of course.
Go ahead,
Les,
Bob. I'm sorry.
You first. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, guys. A little cross-eyed here. Like I said, the messages are coming in fast and furious. Mostly congratulations. Some calling me an idiot, but that's all right. I was expecting that.
Welcome to the club.
Welcome to the club.
Oh, that means you've made it, you know.
When they start
knocking you, it means you've made it.
Oh, believe me. I'm so good they started knocking me before I made it. So, but they, at Brutal Bob Evans on Twitter, of course. And Facebook is facebook.com/, I think it's just Bob Evans, but you can always look it up. You'll see me there, the big Iron Week thing. There's a coded poster on the front. If you crack the code, you win a prize. You'll never crack it, though, because you don't have enough information. But like I said, the first competitor will be announced next Tuesday, and hopefully I'm not going to do it every week, but I'll do it probably a couple of weeks so we can get things rolling here. But hopefully I have some good names. And like I said, guys, just thanks so much for everything you've done for me. And Les, you know how much I love you and how I feel about you. Mike, I hope you
I love you too, buddy.
Yep. And Rich Tate is actually going to come into my area, so I'll give him a warm embrace when I see him when he comes to my area. So,
this is a hug off. Is that what this is?
It is. We'll have it'll be great.
You and Tate are going to do a 60-minute Iron Man hug off. I know. Okay.
Oh well, hey. Anyway, we won't talk about that from last week. All right. Exactly. All right, boys. I'm going to go let you guys wrap up. But God bless you both, and I'll see you soon.
All right, Bobby,
sir,
take care.
Bob.
God bless you, buddy. Love you, man.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.
We'll have all that stuff. You know, the letter and the contact info is all going to be up at ringsiderap.com. And Les, you know, best of luck on your travels this weekend, too, and keep us informed on what's going on, too, as far as what you see up there.
I'll fill you in next week. Yeah, we're going to have a good time. Lance Storm, I got an email from him yesterday. He's coming up for the afternoon session on Saturday. We're going to have dinner afterwards. So looking forward to it. I'm excited. We're going to have between 25 and 30 kids from all over Western Canada. So it's going to be a good time. I'll fill you in next Wednesday night.
Yes, sir. And, you know, good luck this weekend with your Redskins. I think I got my son. I almost got him to get an Adam Carriker jersey because he's a big pro wrestling fan. But I think I'm going to have to get him the RG3. Everybody's going to have to get an RG3 jersey soon. So
right.
Rich and I didn't have too much bad luck with Atlanta either. But we'll see what happens. It's coming up Monday night against Denver. But everybody, you know where you can find me, so I won't bother hyping that. Unless. Good luck on your travels, Rich. Good luck in the production studio. And everybody, have a good week. We'll see you next week.
We thank you for listening to the Tribecast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.